On today's episode of Double Down Trent, we're looking back at the conference championship games and the head-scratching decisions that were made by two coaches, particularly Matt LaFleur of the Packers and Sean McDermott of the Bills. LaFleur decided not to go for the touchdown at the end of the game, kicks a field goal at 2 minutes, and Sean McDermott decides to play conservative and kick field goals against the Chiefs. You just can't do that. Scared money don't make money. Stay tuned for episode number 98 of Double Down Trent.
Double Down Trent, you might want to tune in. Talking gambling and sports, predicting who might win. Pop culture to movies, let's start up the combo. Ryan and Aaron, man versus the motto. Keep it authentic and it's always live. So competitive, so you know it's always hype. Make sure you subscribe, trust you don't want to miss. Going all in here on Double Down Trent. Hey, yeah, Double Down Trent, let's go.
This is Double Down Trent.
All right, welcome to Double Down Trent, the podcast where two elementary school buddies are talking sports, gambling, and pop culture. My name is Ryan. I am your co-host, as always. Joining us tonight, our NFL insider, Coulter. What's going on, bud?
I don't feel like much of an insider. I feel like I've cooled off here in the last 2 weeks. I was pretty solid in the wild card weekend. Then you guys took me out to the woodshed in the divisional round, and I was off last week on the Bills, so I'm feeling a lack of confidence. It's good that we have the week off, but on the brighter side of things, I do have the Chiefs in our little mini pool, so I'm hanging in there and could end up turning a profit on all this, so who knows.
Hey, man, sometimes it's good to hit the reset button, recharge the batteries, as they say in Wedding Crashers, get back to neutral, recharge the batteries, and this is where we're at. So
pour some syrup on some pancakes.
What do you think keeps it up, Slick? We've also got our Patriots expert living in Philly, Bill Hughes. What's up, bud?
What's going on, boys? Good to be with you tonight. I was a split on the championship weekend and definitely got a lot riding on this Super Bowl now. So I'm excited to get to talk about it and also talk about some of the things we saw with some of these bizarre decisions this past weekend. And also, you know, guys getting rewarded for, you know, sticking with it. And we'll go through some of the highlights. I'm excited.
Yeah. I myself cooled off as well. As we know, even though I didn't win my parlay in the divisional round, technically I'm saying I went 7-for-8. Well, this weekend, whole different story. Got both these games wrong. In my head, I knew the Chiefs were going to win that game, but I put money on the Bills, thought maybe they might cover. But you're right, Hughes, some very, very head-scratching decisions, a lot that we can dissect and pick apart here. Let's just start with the early game, the NFC game, because I think that produced the ultimate what-the-fuck-happened moment, where Matt LaFleur, and I, you know, hats off to the guy. In his two seasons, he took his team to the NFC Championship game, but has lost both of them, made the arguably the worst decision that you could have made in these playoffs. Coulter, we have had a staple on this podcast, bad coaching. We rank the worst coaches in the league. Where do you rank this decision, and what the hell were you thinking that Matt LaFleur was thinking to kick a field goal 2 minutes left to go in the game?
That's what I was saying, gonna sneeze. yeah, I mean, just so baffling. The math just doesn't add up to me. 2% increased probability to win the game with the field goal. You've got Tom Brady across from you. They didn't even onside kick it. They kick it off to them, and he screws up the kick and the clock. They didn't do that right. They short the kick. Brady gets, 202 on the clock instead of the 208 if they kicked it out. So he screwed up every part of that coaching decision. You know, if you make that decision to kick the field goal, you have to execute the kick correctly coming out of it, and he screwed that up. And then, of course, Brady gets the first down conversion and the game is over. He really underestimated, I think, who he was going against. And you know, you hear his comments after the game saying the defense was hot, you know, playing well, and all that is true. You know, the defense was playing better at that point in the game, but man, you just don't give the ball to Tom Brady.
Can we also just talk about, if your defense is hot and you believe in your defense, then why would you be worried if you didn't get the touchdown on fourth down? You've got your defense on the field on the 8-yard line. It makes no sense.
Yeah, with
no
three
sense.
Picks in the one in the half. I mean, he could have thrown a fourth pick in theory, right? And you could get the ball back at the 25-yard line if he throws a pick, right?
Mind-boggling. Yeah. I think it was probably the softest like most defeatist call. And he can say whatever he wants after the game. The reality of it is some math nerd told him that there was a 2% better win probability if he kicked the field goal than if he went for a touchdown. And these guys, again, I actually think that analytics burned them on this possibly. And that there is a chart where they were like, you know what, it does increase our chances of winning given how like our defense is playing. But we all know you're at home. You've got the ball on the 8-yard line. You need a touchdown to keep the game rolling. The Bucs have already scored 31 points. It's not like your defense has been pitching a shutout. Like, I mean, again, like, I don't know what he was thinking. Like, it makes – you have Aaron Rodgers. Like, again, like, it was mind-boggling.
He did fire the special teams coach, which I actually thought was a good move. And this is just a general rule of thumb. Everybody at home who's listening should just write this down for next postseason, and we should just hit it as hard as we can when next postseason happens. The Packers were 30th ranked in special teams. That team will, those kind of teams will never, ever, 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 ever win the Super Bowl. You cannot be ranked 30th in special teams in January and win the Super Bowl, period. And that's the bottom line. And he just fired the guy because that kick sucked. And his defensive coordinator didn't do him any favors at the end of the first half, allowing that touchdown. He made a horrible call with that field goal, but his staff didn't help him either. I mean, Mike Pettine, what the fuck is that defensive call at the end of the first half? And then again, the kick. I mean, how do you not kick the ball into the back of the end zone? It just so many bad things went wrong in the Packers. And, you know, I know Hugh's a big Brady and Bucks fan, but you can't look at that game and not say that the Packers just pissed it away. I mean, just so many bad decision-making things on their end. Obviously Brady played great in that first half, but I view it as the Packers blew it. I mean, they're at home. You have an advantage at home. You were 13-3, your best team in the NFC, and you blew it. That's the way I'm always going to remember this game.
I thought you were going to go with the Chris Carter always have a fall guy. I mean, that was clearly Matt LaFleur's fall guy. Got rid of his special teams coach. But you're right. I mean, there is just so many different things you can talk about. Hughes, I think you made the best point. If you are so confident in your defense, then you go for it on fourth down, and guess what? They're now on the 8-yard line. Offenses, when they're backed up like that, can make mistakes, whether it's a false start, whether it's something stupid. We already saw Brady throw three picks.
Bucks are penalty prone on offense, too, right. I feel like.
It was so dumb.
It didn't make any sense. It's losing football. We saw it with Andy Reid going for it the week before. There's been so many moments that we've seen, like, guys, coaches, whatever, make decisions that have put their team in a position where you have the confidence that they can go win you a game. This, though, he may feel like that was what he was doing. It wasn't. I mean, there are so many things that could have happened with that field goal attempt, the whole thing. And again, you have Aaron Rodgers who was having, I mean, I was just looking at his numbers. He had 346 yards, 3 touchdowns. I mean, the guy is your best player. He's the MVP of the league, and you're going to trot your kicker out and hope that your defense can hold when you've got Aaron fucking Rodgers. Doesn't make any sense.
Rodgers' comments were pretty clear, too, that he thought they were going for it on fourth down. That's why he tried to force that throw in there. I know people were kind of on him for not running there, but Devin White was right there. And I know in that screenshot, it looks kind of wide open, but guess what? Devin White runs a 4.440. Rodgers might have got a couple yards. They might have been closer. Maybe that makes it an easier decision, but he wasn't scoring the touchdown there. Regardless, you got to go for it on fourth down there. You still need a touchdown. Even after they kicked that field goal, you still need a touchdown. You're down 5. So
mind-boggling. Being down 5 with less than 2 minutes to go against Tom Brady, you'll never be able to justify that to me. I just don't get it. What does getting down 5 do to you in an NFC title game? It just doesn't make any sense.
No, and I agree, too, that, like, Brady didn't, like, but he didn't have to go win it. Like, literally, the Packers gave it to him. Like, it really was a situation where I thought Tom played well in the first half, though. Some of the picks in the second half were total head scratchers. I think we talked a lot about how in the Saints game, he didn't make those throws and kept them in the game and didn't do the, no risk it, no biscuit. In this game, he did. They still came out on top, but they came out on top primarily because the Packers just couldn't find a way to get out of their own way.
And to me, the touchdown before the half is as unforgivable as not going for it on fourth down. We went over this earlier in the season. The Jets had that exact scenario happen to them, and they fired their defensive coordinator. Mike Pettine, former, I think, head coach of the Jets, right? Same exact thing.
Browns.
You got to get rid of this guy after that. There's 8 seconds to go in the half. There's only one of two things, or there's two things that can happen. Maybe they go and throw a quick one on the sideline, try and move a little closer for a field goal, or they're clearly going for the end zone. Why are you running cover zero when you already saw it fail this year? It just makes no fucking sense. That really flips the game. I think the score was, 14-10 at that point before that?
Yeah.
Something around that ends the game.
Down 11 at halftime. It's totally deflating.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, that was a dime pass too.
Oh, it was.
I mean, just handed it to, and again, he was wide open. So I'm not trying to say it wasn't, but like that, that make sure, making sure you don't overthrow that in that situation, making sure like that whole, it just was ridiculous. Like he should fire Pettine too. I agree. He should clean house. This should be a full, all right, Aaron, we're bringing you back. And I think, again, by the way, one thing they did prove, they didn't need to draft a wide receiver in the first round. That they had a lot of guys step up this year. And I just feel kind of bad for them because they deserve something better than their coach absolutely putting their defense on the line.
I texted you boys earlier. We were thinking about recording and we had a little delay. And I said, don't worry, I'm watching Jeopardy. Well, this is a little aside. As I've been dominating Jeopardy, I have been really good, really keen at guessing the amount that people are going to wager on their daily double. Ooh. And I keep saying this, when they don't go all in on these key moments, I have an expression. It's not my own. I didn't create it, but scared money don't make money. These coaches, they're coaching scared. You cannot coach scared when you're on the verge of going to the Super Bowl. We saw Andy Reid. We said it earlier, Hughes. Andy Reid did this in the divisional round, and he sacked up, and he went for it and got his team where they needed to be. And we saw now the Titans and the Steelers and now the Packers and even the Bills.
We are not idiots. We'll do absolutely everything we can to keep Rodgers.
Jim Rome just entered.
Little Rome appearance.
I just had a pop-up ad on. I was looking at some props for this thing. I had a pop-up Jim Rome entrance. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, first time, long time.
My man. Jim Rome.
Sorry about that. Yeah, no, I mean, it also happened earlier in that game. Bruce Arians went for it right before that Hail Mary on fourth and one.
Best call of the day.
Yep. Big spot. He went for it, showed that he had faith in his team, then goes for it again, doubles down, scores a touchdown. And they literally saw risky football and taking chances rewarded against them and still decided to kick the field goal. I'll never understand it.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens because Rodgers clearly was pissed. Sounds like he wants out. And I saw someone tweet, I forget who it was, maybe a nobody, but I thought it was actually really interesting that Rodgers is in a position now where he can essentially force the Packers hand by declaring that he wants some kind of contract extension, right? So he's like, listen, if you want me to be here, commit to me for the next 4 years. They just drafted Jordan Love. So I don't know if
he has all the leverage in this situation, in my opinion. Yeah, by the way, there's odds on Aaron Rodgers if we wanted to go over him.
Ooh, I kind of like it because I have a thought here that your team, Hughes, the Patriots, would be a hell of a spot for Aaron Rodgers to land.
I was going to say, let me pull them up. They have the Patriots at plus 950 if we wanted to make a double down Trent.
Why don't we talk about the Broncos? Like, I mean, the Pats are – everybody's going to talk about the Pats. The Pats need to hit the reset button. I would love Aaron Rodgers. Don't get me wrong. I would love Matt Stafford more than a lot of things. But, like, at this point in the game, the defense is old. They don't know how many guys are coming back that opted out. Again, I think several of them are – well, I know Cannon's already retiring. I'm wondering – Hightower, there's rumors he's going to retire. And who the heck knows what Patrick Chung decides to do. But again, coming off of a year taken off, I don't know what those guys are going to have in the tank. McCourty's old. McCourty's brother's old because they're twins. They've got a bunch of aging guys that I just don't know if like an Aaron Rodgers looks at New England, especially with where the Bills are at, and says like, hey, that's my best chance. Now, the Broncos, not saying that they are not in the division with the team that's now gone to the Super Bowl twice, but the Broncos are more of a quarterback away than the Pats are. So yeah, I'd be interested in your opinion on that, Coulter. Do you think one of these Stafford or Rodgers?
The Broncos are second in line. They actually moved up a hair in the odds to get Stafford. Currently, they're not on the sheet to get Aaron Rodgers. So I don't know what that means. They've got the Niners, Saints, Patriots, Colts, Steelers, and Raiders. So I guess they don't think Rodgers is coming to Denver. But yeah, the Broncos, I think, are in the market, and you got the new GM, and he's obviously familiar with Stafford coming from the NFC North. So, I mean, I would not put it against us. It's definitely a possibility. I like that ninth overall pick as a trade chip, to get a guy like a Deshaun Watson. I don't know if I'd want to trade it for Matt Stafford, but we could definitely talk first rounder 2022 for Matt Stafford.
Well, I'd say that for Rodgers would make a lot of sense too. I mean, you're going to have to throw in more than that, but hey,
they could have the ninth pick for Aaron Rodgers. I'll take Aaron. we went over this with Peyton Manning. Give me Peyton Manning type or Aaron Rodgers type. We'll give whatever you want. That puts you in contention to win a Super Bowl tomorrow.
Instantly.
All right.
And you saw it with the Bucks, quite frankly. I mean, you went from 7-9 to they are in the Super Bowl. That's what that kind of a move does, and credit to their GM. I don't personally don't give the GM award to anybody else but the guy in the Bucks. That was how I felt when Elway landed Manning. I couldn't believe that they fucking gave it to goddamn Ryan Grigson in 2012, which I'll never, ever, ever forgive the writers of America for doing, because this ass clown trades a first-round pick for Trent Richardson, and he's the GM of the year over fucking John Elway, who convinced Peyton Manning to come to Denver. Like, what the hell? It's clear as day. The GM of the year is the guy who gets Peyton Manning or Tom Brady as a free agent, period. It doesn't need to be a discussion.
Yeah, so, no, agreed. Before we jump into the next game, Hughes, I'll allow you now to wax poetic once again about Mr. Tom Brady, because, I mean, listen, we said a little bit last week, it's absolutely incredible. The guy now, there's all kinds of stats and cool factoids they're putting out there, that he's got as many NFC championships as Brees and Rodgers. He's got like the third most amount of playoff wins against NFC teams. Like, it's just insane. So I'll give you the floor again for a little bit to just reflect on what's happening here.
Yeah, no, I think you saw exactly why he decided to make the decision that he did. I think you saw when a lot of people were scratching their head about why the Bucks, not only from what his body, it seems like he, from a health perspective, looks healthier, looks reinvigorated. Getting out of New England, getting out of, you know, some of the stress, reducing some of the meat, like the media, I'm sure that he's dealt with all years, just not even pales in comparison to what he had before. I think he's been able to relax. I think he's enjoyed it a little bit more. I think you saw that he's taking more risks. I mean, I think he took maybe a few too many in that game, but you're really getting to see a guy who, this is why he did this. He did this knowing that he could get to this point. And I think a lot of us thought we were seeing another cocky athlete who might be past his prime, who doesn't maybe have what he had, and it's not going to be able to change the culture. Bruce Arians is going to be the thing holding him back. And, you know, it's not going to be the same. He's got to go against Aaron Rodgers. And here he is going to his 10th Super Bowl, his 10th Super Bowl. To put that into perspective, I don't even know what you compare that to, you know, because it's just been 2 decades of dominance. And I saw the stat that he has now been to 5 Super Bowls in each decade. Like, it's not like he had a great first 10 years or a great second 10 years. He had almost the exact 2 10-year periods. And you know, we'll see how he does.
Post
37
stuff is insane. I mean, he's accomplished more post 37 than probably any individual athlete right?
It's unbelievable. And again, I think, you know, for a lot of people, it's been funny to watch people get on the Tom Brady bandwagon that forever didn't want to see anywhere near him because of the Pats part of it. And I think the Pats thing has proven that there was an aura to that dynasty. But a lot of that was the fact that they had the best player in the world playing for him for almost 20 years and the best coach at the same time. And I think those two things together allow you to stitch a lot of wins. And so I think now that he's off that, it's been funny on Twitter and different places to be like, you know, I hated Tom Brady until he went to the Bucks, and now I'm kind of rooting for him. Like, the idea that people have come around on Tom is it's just a good story. I think he always got a little bit of a bum rap. He keeps things kind of tight to the vest. He doesn't have a ton of personality. He's not doing SNL like Peyton was. He doesn't do the commercials like Peyton did. You know, he doesn't really have that. And sometimes neither does Rodgers, but Rodgers seems a little bit more relatable at times. I don't know if that's just, but like, yeah, and I think he's proven that he can do it, and he can change a culture, and he can bring a team and will a team in a lot of ways to a title game. And let's see what he can do. Could he become the first quarterback to lead a team to a home Super Bowl win, along with the fact that this would be, you know, just an incredible upset, in my opinion, if he can beat Mahomes and the Chiefs?
Yeah. I mean, it would be insane. I know Peyton has already done this and switched teams, but Coulter, you can attest, I think by the end of that season, Peyton, you could see he was shot. His arm wasn't the same. The offense wasn't the same once they got into the playoffs. Brady has not shown any kind of fall off. The guy threw 40 touchdowns this year. He's looking sharp in the playoffs. Granted, he had the 3 picks in the second half, but I don't know, man. It's crazy. I got a stat here for you. Granted, again, some of this Tom Brady stats goes back to the Patriots, obviously, but this is going to be interesting because I know, Hughes, this is something of interest for you. This is your profits if you were just betting on Tom Brady as an underdog, okay? If you just bet the money line on Tom Brady as an underdog, you're up over 15 units in his career. If you bet the spread, you're up over 14 units. So when he's an underdog, you just bet him. And I know we've talked about this, and we'll get there. We had a nice exchange via text about this right off the bat, but you just make money by betting the guy as an underdog.
Yeah, and he's proven time and again that that's a position that he likes to be in. And I almost think that, you know, again, going into this Super Bowl, it's a lot easier when you're in a locker room of guys to motivate them as a dog than it is as a favorite, you know, especially if you haven't been there before. You haven't really developed that. Again, you're the evil, like the Bucks aren't anybody's evil empire. If they were going into this game, the favorites, I think they're all like, yeah, we're the favorites. They're feeling themselves. I think right now you've got a rallying cry around. No one's giving us a chance. You know, all the cliches. And I think that helps Tom. I think Tom, he'll put out, I don't know if you guys saw the hype video, but he's got a great social team. They put out a great hype video before the last game. He'll have another one. The boys will be ready to go. We saw Devin. I'm so excited to talk about Devin White and Lavonte David when we get into the Super Bowl and maybe some props around defensive plays, because I think this defense, too, is playing as well on the front as they have. And so I'm pumped for that. I think it's going to be a really tough matchup for the Chiefs. And again, does the cheetah get loose? I think they find a way to keep them a little bit more in the cage than they maybe did the first time.
Okay. Now, for the listeners, what we're going to be doing is next week, we're going to do our full official picks. We're going to do some props as more things become available. So that's when you're going to get our deep dive. Tonight, we're just kind of scratching the surface here. But, Coulter, let's look at the AFC Championship game first before we do a little more preview of the Super Bowl. The Bills, you know, they were a good story. They look like a really good team. They're poised, but they ultimately just ran into a buzzsaw. But I think the common theme here was not playing aggressive. The Bills ended up kicking field goals, I think, twice in different points of the game. When they're down 12, they decide to kick field goals late in the game. What was your big takeaway from that AFC Championship game there, Coulter?
Oh, my big takeaway from the coaching aspect is McDermott owned it after the game. And he said, you know what, I was thinking get points before the half. But I think from what I heard from him was, you know, I made the wrong decision. And if I was given the decision again next year in the AFC Championship game, we're going for the touchdown. He learned from his error, unlike LaFleur, who was like kind of sticking by with what he did, which didn't make any sense to me. But the aggressiveness, you're so right. I mean, when you're playing the Chiefs, you can't settle for three. You have to get six, especially when you're down there. It seemed to me like the Bills just kind of ran out of steam, if that makes any sense. They played their best ball in December. And then when the playoffs started, they never seem to have that flair that they had when they were beating up on the Broncos, Patriots, and Dolphins. It just seemed like a team that maybe is just a year or two away. And then I think the key factor we hit on last week, and of course I was on Buffalo like an idiot and didn't reassess myself during the weekend, which would have been very clear, is they only had Singletary. The Moss injury really did hurt them. They're so limited with their running game. That really, I think, limited what they could do offensively. And you got to give a lot of credit to the guys, Fenton and Breland on Kansas City secondary. They really shut down Brown, Diggs. They did a great job. Gabriel Davis was a non-factor. Beasley, I know he had the broken leg, but really just not a great game from anybody in that Buffalo passing attack. And that was what they needed because they are so one-sided. Of all the four teams that played on Sunday, it was very blatant to me that the Bills really were the team that just was so weak in one area. And that's, I think, what held them back ultimately.
Yeah. And Hughes, I mean, it's the theme we were talking about, scared coaches. They're not playing aggressive. What were you taking away from that game?
Yeah. I mean, it was just one of those games where, as you were watching it, you did start to feel like the Bills aren't there yet. Like I thought they looked and played a little tight. I thought Allen again looked a little nervous and did some of the Josh Allen things that I think we didn't see during the regular season. Like, we saw a level of maturity, I thought, during the regular season where he wasn't making those plays where you're like, what is he doing? Like, the intentional grounding on one of them, he took a couple of bad sacks. There were just plays where it just looked like he wasn't feeling his way through the game. He was trying to hit home runs. Like, again, against the Chiefs, you have to be patient. You have to take the air out of the ball a little bit because, again, they'll cut you so deep so quick that you just need to have some. And then you do have to take some chances and score touchdowns. They're not a team you can beat with field goals. The Pats, again, I watched it as the Pats played games forever. They scored touchdowns. They held the teams they played to kicking field goals. If you can do that in the red zone, you can beat a lot of teams because, again, the Chiefs are not going to be held down for long. That offense is too good, regardless of even, I mean, again, they've got almost all the weapons back. Fisher got hurt at the end. I don't know. I didn't see what came out of that. If he's okay or what. I know.
Oh, he's out.
Yeah.
Is he out? Okay. I know they had a couple offensive line. Oh, really? Man. Mm-hmm. They had a couple offensive linemen get dinged. And so that could play a factor because that Bucks defensive front is going to be.
We'll get to that in a second. You don't worry. We've got MVP props. We've got MVP props.
I'm excited. So anyways, I think that game just played out I agree with Coulter. That was an emotional pick for me. I was on the Bills. I like the way that the Bills are playing. I thought that they were a good story. I thought, you know, again, Brady against the Bills would have been a lot of fun. The Bills kind of get over the hurdle and all Bills fans get tortured with another Brady matchup. But again, we saw the best team in the NFL, I think, play in that game on Sunday. And I did not think they played their best game. Their defense does have some holes, but they did do what they needed to do, which was take away Diggs. Like you said, that is the only straw, like Coulter said, that could even begin to stir that drink. It was either that or Josh Allen running the ball. And Josh Allen ran a couple times effectively, but like a couple times he just, again, he got took sacks and it just sucked the entire life out of that offense. So it was a weird game to watch. It wasn't super entertaining. Pachita is for real though. I mean, like that guy made three moves before anybody could even figure out where the hell he was going. It was, I hate rooting for him because, again, I'm not the biggest fan. But at the same time, like, he is really, really good.
I'm glad you brought up the sacks because he took two or three that were just killer. They were, like, minus 15, 20 yards a couple times. And to be honest, we saw that last year with Josh Allen in the playoffs. Remember, he had a couple wild plays against the Texans, just some loose things with the ball. And, I mean, that's a maturity thing. I think he'll get there. But a few of the things that I noticed, the Kansas City defense came to play. And they got pressure in the front four. Their secondary just pressured the shit out of all the receivers at the line of scrimmage. I mean, they weren't getting releases at all. So that really changed the game. One of my prop bets that I put down on that game that I was like, this is an absolute lock. It was at 3-1 was Travis Kelce and Stephon Diggs both to get over 100 yards. Before the game, I'm looking at this. I'm like, that is free money. Let's go. Well, Diggs had 12 yards going in the fourth quarter. I mean, they completely neutralized him. So it's not going to be easy. And, you know, that Chiefs unit, they don't really get a ton of credit. They're not a great unit, but they've been stepping up. And I think it happened last year, too, where you saw them kind of come together near the end of the season. So give it up for my guy Spags. He's got something working. Maybe he's been holding back, but Spags in the house.
That defense was critical in last December, getting that team to a place where they got the two seed, had a home game, obviously, against Houston, which I think was important. And then, you know, they didn't play great against that Houston team, but I think the defense really was great down the stretch for Kansas City. And it's not the best unit in the NFL by any stretch, but I think it's an underrated unit. And I think the game could go under, honestly. I think these are two underrated defenses. I was surprised to see the numbers obviously reflective of the two quarterbacks, which, you know, I get it. They're going to get action on both sides of that. But I do think both of these defenses are coming into the game just a hair underrated.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I think I do want, you got to give Spags credit. That I thought the game plan, again, but to take Diggs away and to really make them one-dimensional in a dimension that they didn't really have an option to play was impressive. And I thought that they do have, again, they're good at each level. They're not great. I mean, I think they're, again, I think Chris Jones is obviously an elite talent and one of the best players in the league. But like, other than that, they just have guys who fit their system and play well together. And I think they are, it's going to be tough. To Coulter's point, they played really well down the stretch. And I think that will be reflective. They've seen the Bucs before. They know what they're going to get. There's not going to be a shock to either team. And so I think that you are going to see the defenses probably have some early success. First half under for sure. I think it would be an interesting, very, very attractive bet because I'm sure it's a decent number.
Yeah. And I'm with you, Coulter. I actually think this is going to be under two. I think it opened out like, what, 57 or something
56,
like that?
56, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a high number. And generally speaking, Super Bowls are tight, especially the last couple ones we've seen. But Hughes, this
we can't forget, isn't Tampa's field grass too? I feel like that has to impact. This isn't a turf field. We're not playing where the Cardinals play. I feel like, we'll talk more about it next week, I think, when we break it down. But, yeah, that's where my early gut was that the number was a hair too tall for my liking.
Yeah, I agree. Hughes, you do make a really good point with Fisher getting hurt. It's going to be really big because to bring this full circle, the Packers, I want to go back to them real quick. They lost David Bakhtiari, their left tackle, and for a couple of games, it looked like it didn't matter at all. But eventually, when you lose your best offensive lineman, especially your left tackle, that comes back to bite you in the ass. And we saw it in that game. The Buccaneers got pressure with their front four. They didn't have to blitz, and Rodgers looked a little rattled. I'm not saying that that's exactly going to happen in the Super Bowl, but the Buccaneers front four is very good, and they can easily get pressure. If you're now down your most experienced veteran left tackle, I don't know if that just goes completely unnoticed.
And on top of that, before we get into the props, there are guys that play on the Tampa Bay defense that are going to try and kill Patrick Mahomes. I don't want to say this any clearer. These guys are animals. Sue, David, we've talked about White, like these guys are going to be out for blood. And again, yes, you don't have your left tackle. You got to imagine that Andy's thinking, I got to get the, it's going to be similar to the Pats probably game plan against the Seahawks when they played him in the Super Bowl. I got to get the ball out of his hand as quickly as humanly possible, because there are going to be big, bad men that are going to try and kill him.
And you're going to have to chip with the running back. I know it's, listen, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a rookie, so is he going to be trusted? I know he's banged up too, to be picking up little pass blocks on JPP and Ndamukong
Suh. Buckle your chin straps.
One of my favorite, I'll give a little tease, is Daryl Williams is all over my touchdown scoring props. I think he gets a lot more playing time than Helaire does in this game.
Yeah.
I've been impressed with him. I'll be honest with you. He's been one of the more impressive. Like, he gets fired up after every one of his runs, which I always think is great about running backs. They run for like 9 yards and they act like they just like won the Super Bowl. It's great. But he was a difference maker. He brought a physicality to that run game that I don't know if they really had with Helaire. I like Helaire a lot. Don't get me wrong. But like, not a finesse back by any means. But he's a little smaller in stature. He's like 5'9". He's pretty thick. But yeah, Williams definitely. I think that's a great call, Coulter. I think he's going to definitely have to be a difference maker.
Yeah. So as we said, we're going to be doing the full props, full picks next week, but we're going to give you guys little teasers, little, something to wet the beak a little bit. So Coulter, give us a couple of things you're looking at here.
Do you want me to start with the MVPs, or do you want me to just go into my favorite little ditty that I've found on the internet?
Let's go with the MVP first. And then once we get that established, let's go into the other ones you like.
So the MVP, big lesson here for everybody. If you like an MVP, they actually give it out a week in advance. You could have gotten Tom Brady at 5-1. So that would have been amazing. You basically get the Bucks money line for 5-1 with that. Cause I think if Bucks win, he will win it. And I think it's a quarterback award. It kind of going off that Williams discussion we just had. My biggest takeaway watching the Super Bowl last year is I was watching with my wife, just thinking, I kept saying, Damian Williams is the MVP of this game. He's playing great for the Chiefs. And then Mahomes made one great throw at the end of the game. Of course, quarterback wins the award. With that said, there have been 34 special teams defensive touchdowns in Super Bowl history. And if you get a guy who has a return touchdown, I call this the Robert Alford Memorial, because I had him at 300-1 to win Super Bowl MVP the year that he picked off Brady and took it to the house. And if it wasn't for Brady coming all the way back, I would have cashed that bad boy. Of course, if you had Malcolm Smith, I think Hughes had Von Miller. Defensive guys can win this award. So right away, where my mind went, Shaq Barrett, we just talked about the offensive tackles being hurt for Kansas City. That's my former Bronco brother. I could see that storyline. He gets to Mahomes 2 or 3 times, a strip sack, kind of like the Broncos did to Cam Newton. Maybe he recovers one. Maybe he scores one. This guy's a monster. He's an animal. He undrafted out of Colorado State. I love this kid, Shaq Barrett, 50-1. On the other side, another defensive player, Tyrann Mathieu. Are you kidding? He has to make one big play on the defensive side, whether it's pick Brady off or strip Mike Evans of a ball or strip Antonio Brown. And if that happens in the fourth quarter, maybe he blocks a punt. Who knows what Tyrann Mathieu can do? He did so many different things at LSU, 50-1. I'll put $2 or $3 on that just for fun. Two other ones on the defensive side of the ball, Devin White. Hughes was mentioning him, 100-1. I think he's going to be a monster all game long. I think if he gets an interception in the game, he will definitely be in consideration. I could see him having a pick and a fumble recovery. If that happens, 100-1 looks like a really juicy ticket. And then this is the Robert Alford Memorial Special. I highly recommend the listeners put $1 on Sean Murphy Bunting at 300-1 odds. I will promise you this right now. There has never been a prop player in the Super Bowl MVP category that will play more in a game with 300-1 odds than Sean Murphy Bunting. He is the nickel corner for Tampa Bay. Guess what Kansas City is going to be doing all game long? 3 receiver sets. Sean Murphy Bunting will be on the field. Yes, he could get burned by Mecole Hardman, or he could make the Robert Alford type play and pick off Patrick Mahomes and take it the other way. At 300-1, why not put a dollar on it and just put a coin in the freaking slot machine and pull it down? That seems like a lot of fun to me. I also like Breland and Fenton on the Kansas City side at 150-1, but those are really long shots. I think if Kansas City wins, as I pointed out, they'll just end up finding a way to give it to Mahomes. But
and
those are the snacks that I'm preparing for my Super Bowl MVP feast.
Murphy Bunting, that's a real nice one. The guy's had an interception in I think two of the three or both the games they played in, three games.
He had a pick against
The Saints, yeah, he almost returned that for a touchdown. I mean, he's playing really good, and you're right. They're going to be throwing the ball against him, so I like that a lot.
All day long, that guy will be on the field. I couldn't believe that he was 300-1 because his counterpart, Jamel Dean, is 150. I mean, there's a more high chance that Dean gets burned by Tyreek Hill left and right, and Murphy Bunting could play the role of hero on a – as you were saying, get rid of the ball quick. What if he jumps one of the passes kind of like the guy in the Rams did a few weeks ago? Yeah. Like, that could happen.
I really like the Tyrann Mathieu because – listen, let's say this game plays out a lot like last year's Super Bowl, Chiefs-Niners. You know, it may not, but let's say this is a low-scoring, back-and-forth game, and maybe Mahomes doesn't come up with the big play in the end. I know that's kind of far-fetched, but what if it's a pick-six by Mathieu? What if it's a strip sack by Mathieu? The guy's all over the field. I really like that one a lot, Coulter.
Yeah, I mean, you know this guy has a nose for the football, right? And he is going to make a play in this game. I don't know if it will be the play, but at 50-1, that's basically when you take a long shot in the MVP, you're just hoping that he's the Malcolm Smith or the Desmond Howard, which brings me to my other guy. This is probably my fifth one total long shot here. But Mecole Hardman, if he returns a punt, a kick, why not? He could be in consideration for this award. He could change the game. The game could be 24-17. Chiefs leading and the Bucks decide to punt and Mecole Hardman takes one to the house and the game is all of a sudden a 14-point game and it might be over at that point. You know, he could totally change the game.
So I love Hardman. I love betting him his touchdown odds to whether it's to score or to score first, but I did find a little bit of a hack on some of these sites. So especially, and I'll use the FanDuel example because I think this is a good bet for Hardman. If you think one of those plays might happen, so you can parlay player props now. So you can parlay any time touchdown score with first time touchdown score, and it increases your odds. And honestly, it's the exact same bet. So you only need to hit one, and guess what? You can win two. And they let you parlay it now, so you can jump your odds. And I agree. A $5, $10. The other one interesting is kickoff return for a touchdown to open the game, because I do think Hardman, and I don't know if anybody caught this, there was some audio after he fumbled of him on the bench. I gained probably more respect for Patrick Mahomes in that clip than I ever have probably had in my entire life as a leader. I mean, Utah saw a guy who was clearly down about a play that could have cost them the game. Mahomes comes over, picks him up. He ends up scoring a touchdown later, ends up having a big run on that reverse. And again, like, this is the kind of team that the Chiefs are. And so I think I love that, especially if Sammy Watkins doesn't play. If Sammy Watkins is out, he gets a lot more reps, and we've seen that the last couple of weeks. I don't know where Sammy's at. He hasn't been very reliable, but I do love, one, maybe the scratch ticket on Hardman for MVP, and also parlay or straight up Hardman any touchdown score with first touchdown score. You can also parlay it with first half touchdown score, which even further, like, I feel like we're like trying to buy GameStop stock right now. But like,
I love those first half touchdown. That is something I'm going to be hitting on next week. I love that they're offering that. That is like the creme de la creme of prop bets. I'm so pumped for those.
And like, again, like the fact that like you can like, again, do some parlays with some of those prop bets on a lot of the sites so now is a lot of fun. You can mix and match. And like, again, you can make some $5 bets. It's like buying a square, right? I mean, you could buy a square and just hope you hit the score, or you could put $5 on a plus 10,000 plus 30,000, you know, like, and actually have like a fun chance to watch it. And then again, you know, it's one of those things. But I love the Devin White stuff too. JPP is another interesting one. He's been playing a little bit better. He could eat a little bit. I can't believe I mentioned guys that were going to try and kill people. I mean, I didn't mention Shaq Barrett, probably their best defensive pass rusher. I mean, like, again, like, that's how they're deep up front, and they are going to be after Patrick Mahomes. And I am very interested to see what answers Andy Reid tries to come, because I do think like a defensive score prop is another good one. Defense first touchdown or defense special teams first touchdown is probably going to be one where I would maybe go with the Chiefs, actually, because of the Hardman piece. But there's a lot. I was just looking at, you know, some more of the props. There are a lot of good ones out there.
This one's going to go down, but we should tell the listeners plus 250 for what Hughes just said. Special teams or defensive touchdown in the game. That is great odds, in my opinion. I know the quarterbacks are accurate and they're all-time greats, but that doesn't mean they're not prone to errors. Brady threw three picks last week. Yep. He also threw a pick six, as I mentioned, against Atlanta. I mean, and Mahomes without the tackles reminds me a lot of Cam Newton against the Broncos. 5 years ago, I can hear the storyline already. Barrett was Von Miller's backup, and look where he is now. 5 years later, he's the Super Bowl MVP. I'm definitely going to put a couple bucks on Shaq Barrett for sure.
Yeah. And I will say too, I mean, I like Mike Evans, like to have a potentially big game. I feel like he's been kind of under the radar a little bit. I don't know if he's hurt. I'm hoping he comes out healthy. And the Gronk MVP one is pretty high too. Gronk has been kind of silent. This feels like a Gronk type of game where again, he can eat a little bit over the middle, but we'll see. I think there's a lot of, obviously I'm on the Bucks. There are tons of good MVP options on the Chiefs. But again, to Coulter's point, if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, I'm guessing Patrick Mahomes is the MVP. Similar with the Bucks with Brady, but I do think the Bucks have much more of a chance of having one of their guys be the MVP than the potentially the Chiefs do.
Yeah. I'll throw out one that I like. I don't even know if it's available yet, but it's one I'm doing because it's happened in the past two playoff games that they've played. I am taking Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill over 100 yards receiving. I know I kind of got burned by the mix last week with Diggs and Kelce, but those two guys have gone off. Last week they went for like 180 and 130. Kelce had like 100 in the first half. I mean, those two guys are going to get the ball no matter what. So I am going to be doing that one.
I think it's a good bet with Hill and to kind of piggyback on the Hardman thing. What have we seen with our eyes here in the playoffs? And I think throughout the season, or at least from that first game between the Bucks and the Chiefs, to me, I really do respect that Bucks defense, but they struggle with the elite speed, don't they? I mean, Tre'Quan Smith had two touchdowns for the Saints the other week. That's why I kind of like this Hardman play. I feel like if they overcommit to Hill, Hardman can do what Hill did to them in the first game. And I know he's not as good as elite of a receiver, but man, the guy is fast as hell. If he gets open, he could be the one that has the three touchdown game. But yeah, I agree with your point. I mean, Hill over 100 yards, he can get that in two plays. The guy is so fast.
And I know Hughes, we went on a little back and forth tirade on text. That first game they played this year, Tyreek Hill had 200 yards in the first half. Just putting it out there.
No, and again, I mean, I think he's proven that he can go big. I can't imagine when looking at the Chiefs offense that their first concern is not to try and take away Tyreek Hill. Now, that being said, maybe they go the opposite direction of like, hey, no, let's make Tyreek Hill work and beat us. I feel like they're not going to want that to happen. But again, there have been teams that have tried to stop him. The Pats have done a pretty good job over the years at times, but he still gets loose. He still has his plays. He's like Lamar Jackson. Like, I feel like I feel similarly about Tyreek sometimes as I felt about Lamar. If you can limit those plays that just break your spirit, all of a sudden you're like, okay, it's not that bad. Like, he could eat for, you know, a decent amount of yards and maybe chip away at you on the underneath stuff and him ducking out of bounds. But the second he gets loose and goes for 60 or goes for, like, it's just so demoralizing. Right. Like, because again, he's just shaking and baking and he's doing his thing. But there's going to be a lot of weapons on that field and there's going to be a lot of questions early on about what the coaching decisions were. And I think that's the most fun time about the Super Bowl is like, you really get a sense in that first quarter, but these teams had 2 weeks to prepare. It's a good amount of time. Again, I think the defensive coordinator, Bowles is one of the best coaches, I think, in the NFL. I think again, Spags has been, they both have been head coaches. We got to really, I mean, from a coaching staff perspective, both of these staffs are stacked. I mean, like, and I think that as we've talked, Arians, we make fun of a lot. And I think Bruce definitely has his quirks and he definitely needs to like rein it in a little bit. But again, the Bucks built a really strong staff around Bruce that has allowed them to get to this point just as much as anybody else.
And I'll give Bruce a little bit of credit here because we have hit on him. I think he's made some questionable decisions, but I heard in his press conference, I think it was after this last week's game, where he basically admitted that he's letting Tom Brady just run the offense. So that's a coaching decision. So hats off there because that clearly worked.
Yeah, no, and I think he took a shot at the Pats too, which by the way, I want to address right now because Bruce Arians couldn't hold Bill Belichick's hat. And that's why Bill Belichick didn't let Tom Brady run the team. There's continuity. There's a coach. It's called chain of command, Bruce. Get with the times. I get it. That is 2021. And sometimes you got to relinquish some of that control. And I think to your point, Bruce knows what Bruce is good at and Bruce knows what Tom's good at. And at this point, Tom is willing this team to a Super Bowl because Tom's understands what it takes to get a team to a Super Bowl. And not to say Bruce doesn't, he's been there. And when we had that argument, I said, Bruce Arians has won a Super Bowl. You said, yeah, as an assistant, I still think that matters in terms of the prep and the understanding, but you're right. Bruce Arians has not led a team of players by himself to this point of winning a Super Bowl. And so I think he's letting Tom have more control than Bill did. And Bill is obviously a control freak. I mean, he let the greatest quarterback of all time walk out the door. I mean, like, what does that tell you? Like, again, it's about the program, as Bill always says. And I think now Tom's getting a little bit of that, and I think he's doing a good job. And I think, know, it's been fun to watch, and we'll see what they have for us. I do like the under yards for Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, though. I think it's at 301. I don't think he's crossed 300 yet in the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I think
that
he did against the football team, did he?
Did he? Maybe. I don't. Yeah, you're probably right, because that game was a shootout more than some of the other ones.
My one thing that I'm going to be looking at, and I'll admit to the listeners now, I'm not giving my official pick, but I am leaning towards the Chiefs. I did put a little futures bet down on them earlier in the year, so I'll get to that next week. The one thing I want to see is what can Todd Bowles do defensively to really slow this team down? And Hughes, you made a great point about Tyreek Hill and his speed. The Chiefs do a fantastic job of either keeping him in motion, putting him in the slot where he's off the line of scrimmage, to the point where it is almost impossible to jam him at the line. He's undersized, so I think they obviously do that on purpose. But he is so fast that even if you're 2 yards off of him, you're not slowing him down. In fact, that's a disadvantage. Tony Romo brought this up in the game, and I actually really think this is a smart point. There's been no teams that have been tried to chip and slow down Travis Kelce off the line of scrimmage. I understand it's a different battle. The guy's huge. He probably can physical and push you around. But if the Bucs have a kind of physical safety maybe, or even a fast linebacker, it may be worth it to try and put someone on the line and jam him, slow him down, because he's the other guy. You can do what you want on Tyreek Hill. He's going to get his. But what I've seen from this Chiefs offense is, and the thing that's killing defenses is, Travis Kelce just chips away at you. It's those underneath 15, 20-yard routes, and he is incredible route runner. He's just burning corners. So it's really hard to just let him run free. I don't know if you can do it, but that would be my game plan. I would be trying to slow him down off the line of scrimmage and do as much as I can to take him out of the game.
Yeah, I would say I don't understand from a technique perspective why defenders are trying to stand still while Tyreek Hill's in motion. Like, run with him or do something. Like, again, they're trying to pass it off, and you got guys who are, like, pretty much standing flat-footed while he's just running by them. I did see a stat that the Chiefs, I think, were, like, over 90% pre-snap motion. The team just they've got the most creative offense. They've got the most innovative offense. They just know how to play and run creative plays. And part of that's having the weapons to do it. So that part of it's going to be fun too. Like, there are going to be gadget plays, not trick plays, I wouldn't call them, but plays of misdirection that make you wonder, okay, there it goes. From the screen game, from the reverse game, they do a great job. And they're going to find ways to get in the ball, but you're right. I think that deploying a better strategy on defense of how to try and contain Tyreek Hill. You might as well try something different, because whatever people do doesn't seem to work.
Does not work. All right, Colton, what other props you got?
We didn't even set this up, and he just set me up for my favorite prop of the entire thing. And I also want to use Hughes here, because you're a Patriots guy. So I might be skewed in thinking too much like this is the Tom Brady Patriots, but this is my favorite prop play out there. Will there be a flea flicker? Yes, is +175. I cannot believe that it's almost 2-1. You have Andy Reid, you have Bruce Arians. These are creative offensive coaches. We've seen Tom Brady run flea flickers in the Super Bowl before. Most importantly to all of these factors is Kansas City cannot run the football, so it makes sense that they would do something creative to help the run game. And these are teams that are going to take shots. Both of these are the most aggressive coaches in the league. That's why they're playing in this game. They're going to take deep shots. And a flea flicker is a great way to devise a deep shot play in the Super Bowl. Am I way too biased on the Belichick Pats, or is this like the best bet of the week? I don't understand. How is this +175? The other side should be the +170, or the no should be +175. They're going to throw a flea flicker in this game. I guarantee it.
Yeah, no, I like that bet. I like that bet a lot. I agree with you. I think we're going to see a lot of – you got 2 weeks. You got two guys who love to call offensive plays, love to create different advantages and different mismatches. They got 2 weeks to put a game plan together for a game that's going to be played hopefully in good weather, hopefully on a good – yes, there are going to be stuff, and I would love that bet. I think there's going to be a lot of that. I think you're going to see – you know, again, it's funny. So I actually last week had Mecole's passing yards, and again, he gets a 50-yard reverse. Man, I wish I had his rushing yards. I don't know if that was available. But, like, it's stuff like that. You don't even know with some of these offenses, to your point. Like, they're going to come up with stuff to put guys in a position. And the flea flicker is definitely, for both teams, an easy way to try and, again, create a little bit of separation and see what could happen.
Yeah. Got a good one, Coulter?
I can give out a few more if we want to. These are actually all kind of tied together. So shortest – people will say this on radio shows, I'm sure, throughout the week. This isn't like an original play. The flea flicker one I really thought was great. I couldn't believe I found that one. But so – and this is the opposite because you have to drink a little juice. But shortest touchdown in the game under 1.5 yards. We saw this hit with on the Chiefs game last week. So that's minus 150. I know it's a little tall for some people to drink the juice, but – the reasons why this is a great bet. Pass interference is one reason. You've got two amazing quarterbacks that are going to go up and down the field. The total clearly indicates that we're going to get at least 6 touchdowns in this game. So you have 6 opportunities, maybe 7. I wouldn't be surprised if we see 2 of these bad boys. You know that both offenses are great in short yard situations. As I pointed out in my previous prop, 2 great play callers. These are not offenses that I think are going to get stopped at the 1 yard line. They're not going to run into issues. Brady and Mahomes will convert at the 1 yard line. They're not going to end up settling for field goals. None of that crap. And then kind of tangential to the shortest touchdown. And the reasoning behind it again is 6 or 7 touchdowns will be scored. So you get 6 or 7 opportunities. I love these two bets together. Successful 2-point conversion is plus 185. That's terrific because again, these are great offenses, great offensive coaches. They're really good at the 2-yard situation. And then the other side bet to that is, will your team attempt a 2-point conversion, which is minus 150. I love all of those. Those are all make sense to me. I think you're going to have a tightly contested game. The spread indicates that, right? 3 points. The offenses are going to go back and forth. They're going to trade touchdowns. At some point, someone's going to try a 2-point conversion. What if a kicker gets hurt? We're definitely going to see a 2-point conversion then. So, I mean, there's a lot of factors in here that definitely get you the attempt. And if there's an attempt, I'm betting that the attempt will be successful because these two offenses are just too good in these situations.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. All right. I would like to update the listeners on our little playoff challenge that we had. So I had 2 horses in the running going into the games on Sunday. I have 0 left. Both my teams, the Packers and the Bills, got eliminated. Gut-wrenching. I officially come in 3rd place. Mr. Model, with 1 point, is in last, unfortunately. And you boys are tied up with 8 points apiece. The winner of the Super Bowl got a 10-pack winner. So it's between Hughes and Coulter. Hughes, you are riding your boy Tommy and the Bucks. And Coulter's sitting on the defending Super Bowl champions, the Chiefs.
It's a good spot to be in if you're Coulter. I mean, it's a tough spot to be in. I mean, just because you got a money line bet on like at even odds. I mean, it's pretty good. But no, I mean, I've also got a Bucks future Super Bowl. I think it was plus 1400. I got him at 1 point in time during the season. So
wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, so I've got a few bets riding on the Bucks right now in terms of how this turns out. So I'm excited that I can have both. I did have a Bills future too that I thought maybe I would get lucky and not have to worry about it, but now I can't really hedge because you can't really hedge against the what are they at minus? I think it's not terrible, but I don't have enough on it to really make it worth it. So I'm gonna ride it out.
Why not ride it out? I mean, we went over Brady as an underdog. That's good enough reason, right, to just let it go.
Yeah. Minus 174 on the one I'm seeing right now for the Chiefs. So yeah. Yeah, we'll see. It should be a good matchup. I'm excited that we both have a team in it.
Yeah. As I mentioned, I was sitting on a futures bet on the Chiefs to win it all. I placed this back in middle of November. I got them at 3-1. At that point, I was like, you know what? That's as low as it's going to get for the Chiefs. Might as well dabble in it. So I got a 4-unit bet on them. So I'm excited. I don't think I'm going to hedge it though. I'm just going to let it ride. And then we'll see what I make my pick on officially next week, if it's the Chiefs or not.
Love it.
Good stuff, gentlemen. All right. That was a recap of the championship round. A little preview on some picks and some parlays. That's a good episode in the books, boys. We will see everybody next week on Double Down Trent.
Baby, look at me. Look at me. Your money. You know what else? You're a big winner tonight. I want to leave. You're a big winner. I'm going to ask you a simple question. I want you to listen to me. Who's the big winner here tonight at the casino? Huh? Mikey, that's who. Mikey's the big winner. Mikey wins.
Fucking asshole.
All right, fine. I'm an asshole, but you know what? You're the big winner tonight, Mikey. You're the big winner in more ways than one.